Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Last week, we reached an agreement that will make historic cuts to defense and domestic spending. But there's not much further we can cut in either of those categories. What we need to do now is combine those spending cuts with two additional steps: tax reform that will ask those who can afford it to pay their fair share, and modest adjustments to health care programs like Medicare. Making these reforms doesn't require any radical steps. What it does require is common sense and compromise.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday.
Well, you know what happened today. The market took another bath, down over 600 points. Monstrous drop. And there's no question that you're asking yourself who's to blame for the downgrade of our financial health, really, from a AAA to a AA plus. Who is responsible for the downgrade? The Tea Party, Obama, or Standard & Poor's? I was amazed over the weekend to watch the children in the Obama administration pointing fingers at everybody but themselves. There was Barney Frank saving his fanny by saying it was the Defense Department needed to cut more. There was John Kerry blaming the Tea Party, and there was Obama blaming everybody but him. These are like children at college who found out that their credit's been cut off by their parents, and they're saying, "That's not fair. He did it. I want more credit. My wife has to go to Africa very soon on another big junket. We want more credit." Now, the question is, why is this happening? You can call me if you want to chime in on who's to blame and do a baby talk show of who's to blame for the downgrade, the Tea Party, Obama, or S&P. But I want to talk about Afghanistan as the graveyard of empires, because I've watched this for a while, and I'm pretty sure that we're bankrupt, well, for a number of reasons. We know social spending's out of control. We know there are far too many people on food stamps, on welfare, et cetera. We know that the corporate welfare, such as General Electric, earning $5.3 billion in the United States and paying zero in taxes, is a symptom of corporate welfare that is responsible. However, the American taxpayer, those of us who actually pay taxes, we're overtaxed. We're not going to pay any more taxes. We pay our fair share, Obama. It's the people who put you in power who ought to be paying, and they're paying nothing. The question is, why am I bringing up Afghanistan? Well, two reasons. One, because 20 or so Navy SEALs died over the weekend, and it's already been passed over like nothing happened. But if a dirty, degenerate, perverted slut in Hollywood fell and died, You'd see flowers and balloons and clowns now for 3 weeks from the psychos in the media. Why am I focusing on Afghanistan? Because Afghanistan is known as the graveyard of empires, number one. And I want to develop this theme with you today. Afghanistan has often been called the graveyard of empires. No Western army in the last 2,500 years has defeated or subdued the country of Afghanistan, beginning with Alexander the Great, who conquered Afghanistan in 330, but after a brief occupation, his armies were forced to give up Afghanistan. The British failed in three separate wars to subdue Afghanistan. The Soviet army was pushed out of Afghanistan by the Mujahideen in the 1980s. And now America is fighting an army of terrorist madmen who will have no qualms about fighting us for the next 100 years. No qualms about shooting at our troops from behind every mosque, behind every rock, and every cave in that country. They don't care that no matter how many troops we send, they will still be hiding in the mountains ready to kill us. When I say they don't care. Now, 30 SEALs died this weekend. The largest number of Navy SEALs to ever die in a single incident. The commander-in-chief is Barack Hussein Obama. The Defense Department chief is a man who ran a small college in Monterey, then they made him the CIA head, now they made him the Defense Department head. And we have questions to ask as the American people. And here are the questions. Number one, who authorized all of these SEALs to fly into this mission in one helicopter? Was it Barack Obama in the middle of the barbecue? Did Leon come up to him over a hot dog and say, hey, listen, we're going into Afghanistan. Can we use three helicopters? No, we got to save money. Cut it down to one. Put them all in one. Save on gas. Is that a scenario? Question number two. I read that it was an Army helicopter pilot flying the SEALs. Very unusual. Very atypical so far as I know. Why was there not a SEAL pilot on that helicopter? You and I both know the SEALs are the best of the best, which is not to denigrate Army nor Army Rangers. But the SEALs are a couple of rungs better than everybody. Usually SEALs are flown in by a SEAL team pilot. In this case, there was an Army pilot. Why was there an Army pilot? As I asked on MichaelSavage.com on the weekend, did somebody in the Defense Department tip off the Taliban that it was SEAL Team 6 in that helicopter? Not exactly the same men who killed Osama bin Laden, but they're brothers in arms. Who tipped off the Taliban? The Taliban are boasting that they have infiltrated the Afghan military. If they've infiltrated the Afghan military, it means they've infiltrated the U.S. Defense Department, which means that someone's head ought to roll, and it shouldn't be mine for asking the question. I want to know why the American people are not marching in the street demanding that either Panetta be fired or Obama quit. You have the largest death of the most elite Navy SEALs force in history under the commander-in-chief who was at a barbecue while it happened. And I'm the only one asking the question. One, why were they all in one helicopter? Two, why was there an Army pilot instead of a SEAL pilot? I'm the only one asking the question. Was it Panetta who did this? Who was flying the helicopter? And why was the pilot from the Army as opposed to the Navy SEALs? Heads must also roll as a result of what's happened for the last 10 years. We have spent almost $500 billion on the war in Afghanistan alone. That's what we know we've spent. I believe it's much higher. And while it's true that we killed Osama bin Laden and that we buried him at sea, he may yet bury us in red ink. You can mark those words down. Although Obama buried Osama bin Laden at sea, Osama bin Laden may yet bury us in red ink. And look at the rest of the world. Look what this incompetent group of utopian college students called the Obama administration has done. Are you ready for the list? The currency has been devalued by about 20%. The Arab Crescent is on fire. England is on fire. America is melting down. And who is to blame? The Tea Party? Or Standard & Poor's? Is the U.S. dollar the next financial shoe to drop? I'm going to talk about that because our worst nightmare is that the old term, not worth a continental dollar, may yet come to haunt us here in America in our lifetime. What do I mean by not worth a continental dollar? I'll explain more on this issue as the show evolves. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers. I have some really good callers on the scene. I'm going to ask the questions again because I'm the only one in the media asking the question. One, why were the SEALs in one helicopter, not three? Two, why was it an Army pilot instead of a SEAL pilot? Three, do you think that the U.S. Defense Department has been hacked or infiltrated by enemies of America? I do. I absolutely do. And I believe it's because of the idiots running this country. Albany, New York, Margaret, you're on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Savage, I believe they're definitely set up. The reason being the comparison from years ago, the United States skating team was sent in one plane to compete in the Olympics. And the plane went down and it devastated the Olympic team. Military-wise, this was terrible. This is a commander-in-chief should be responsible for
yes, this. That's right. Obama should resign because of this. Definitely. If nothing else, I mean, he wrecked the economy. He's wrecking the military. Now 20 SEALs are dead, the largest death of a group of SEALs in the history of this incredible elite force. And he goes along like nothing happened. Back to a party now, another party, another barbecue, another vacation.
It does not make sense. I would never do it if I was the commander-in-chief.
Okay, but let's be pragmatic and not hysterical. Why would the 20 SEALs in one plane, one helicopter, not three? Why were they not divided up into three teams? Who decided to put them in one helicopter? When have you ever put all your ducks in a row? What military commander takes 20 men and puts them in one helicopter? Tell me when.
It's not a military commander.
Well, he's not a military commander. The last thing he commanded was a staple gun and a bulletin board in Chicago, the commander-in-chief. But Leon Panetta went from a college in Monterey to the head of the CIA. Then they moved him around like a rotating circular. They move him into the Defense Department. Why? Where does he qualify to be a Defense Department chairman?
He doesn't. The logistics are gone. They're missing. They're not there. The head is not on straight.
Thank you. Who is at the helm? The answer is nobody. I'll be right back. There's too much to cover in one show, but I'm trying to do my best. I'm going to ask again. 31 SEALs died this weekend. The commander-in-chief should take full responsibility. They were flying in one helicopter. That's number one. Why not three helicopters? Number two, why was an Army pilot ferrying that helicopter as opposed to a Navy SEAL pilot? Number three, who within the Pentagon tipped off the Taliban, if anyone? This just came out, and you better hold on to the desk or the seat of your pants what I'm about to read to you, because I feared this, but this news just crossed my desk here on the Savage Nation. The question from the Daily Mail just came out. Who made $10 billion on the bet that the U.S. credit rating would be downgraded? Who made $10 billion on this? Whose name comes to mind? Does it begin with an S and end with an S? A mystery investor or hedge fund reportedly made a bet of almost $1 billion at odds of 10 to 1 last month that the U.S. would lose its AAA credit rating. Questions are now being asked of whether the trader had inside information before placing the $850 million bet in the futures market. There are mounting rumors that investor George Soros, the famous American-hating George Soros, also famously known as the man who broke the Bank of England, could be involved. Soros made more than $1 billion on currency speculation when the British pound left the exchange rate mechanism on Black Wednesday in 1992. A source with knowledge of the firm said Soros was not involved in the rumored trade and questioned whether, in fact, there had been such a trade at all. However, listen carefully. The latest bet was made on July 21 on trades of 5,370 10-year Treasury futures and 3,100 Treasury bond futures. Now the investor's gamble seems to have paid off after Standard & Poor's issued a credit rating downgrade from AAA to AA+. Whoever made this bet stands to earn a 1,000% return on their money with the expectation that interest rates will be going up after the downgrade. The link has been made to George Soros in part because he has been tied to President Obama's administration since 2008, according to The Examiner. You ready for the following line of this article? Here it comes. Soros also recently stopped managing money for outside investors. That was about 2 weeks ago. Remember that? Meaning he is no longer under the scrutiny from the SEC that he would have been if he was managing other people's money. In other words, he ceased being a manager of other people's money. He was no longer under the microscope of the SEC. And then this happened? Well, we don't know if it's him. But the mystery bet and the person who made $1 billion could easily have been made by another trader with similar resources, despite Soros' links to the Obama administration. The bet also raises questions of whether Obama and Treasury Secretary Geithner said in April there was, quote, no risk of a downgrade. But the government now seems to be attacking Standard & Poor's. Again, I want to read you the headline. Who made it $10 billion on a bet that the U.S. credit rating would be downgraded? You think you'll ever find the answer? We have many questions today on the Savage Nation. Many, many questions, many scandals. Any one of them would have brought down another president. But because Obama is such a great man, because Obama is of such a sterling character, because Obama comes from such a sterling background with such a sterling connections to American patriots, we know not to even question him at all. Let's begin with Bob in Chicago. Bob, you're calling about the pilot. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I don't think I was in the 80s, but I don't think that the SEALs are cross-trained to fly or that a Navy pilot would then go into the SEALs. And I just don't think it's there. As far as an Army pilot flying them in, the SEALs were flying in because the Rangers were in contact, and they were part of a rapid deployment force. And they were riding in one Chinook because that's probably all that was available. I don't think there's anything devious. I think it's, yes.
You mean because it's the only bus available, you use that bus when you put 30 men of that distinguished background in one, you put all your eggs in one basket? That makes military sense to you?
No, it may not make sense, but if that's all that's there, that's what's used. It's a wreck.
Wait a minute. If that's all that makes sense, then something's wrong with the command structure. There's only one helicopter in Afghanistan to bring in 31 SEALs?
I'm not arguing about that. Okay.
Well, maybe the other helicopters were busy bringing back the trinkets that Michelle bought in Africa.
Whatever it is.
Where are the other helicopters? Were they bringing back her luggage? Wisconsin, Jerry, go ahead, please.
Yes, you never bring a Chinook into a hot LZ like that when you're trying to rescue somebody.
All right, so what do you use, an Apache? Which attack helicopter do you use?
I mean, where I work today, we don't put all our CEOs and CFOs on the same plane.
That's right, unless you want them to all die at once.
Yeah, and then take the corporation down.
Thank you very much. All right, let's stick to the facts. I allege that whoever decided to put them in one helicopter to begin with should be fired, if not imprisoned. That's number one. I want to know who made that command choice. Number two, why did they use a slow-flying Chinook as opposed to a fast-flying attack helicopter?
I don't know. I wouldn't do it.
I mean, as a non-military man, I'm telling you, my thoughts are clearer than the schmuck running the Defense Department. Okay, I am a non-military man. My questions are better than the schmuck running the Defense Department. How's that?
Savage.
There are varying reports right now between 21 and 30 SEALs. We don't know how many died, but it was the largest single loss of SEALs in U.S. history under Barack Hussein Obama and Leon Panetta. That's number one. Number two, I am asking a simple set of questions. One, why were they all in one helicopter instead of dispersed in three helicopters? Haven't they read the rule that says don't put all your eggs in one basket? Well, that would be sensible if you were a businessman or a man used to risk. But if you are a community organizer where there's been very little risk because the skids are greased for you, or if you're Leon Panetta, who ran a university, then they gave him a CIA job, now he's defense. I'm sorry. Where is the outcry in this country? If a slut actress dies from a drug overdose like that Amy Winehouse, for 2 weeks we heard nothing about the degenerate slut junkie like she was some God Almighty. A degenerate slut junkie dies, and all you hear day and night, Amy Winehouse, Amy Winehouse. Here we have 21 or more heroes die on a mission, the best of the best. Not a word. Not a word out of the media, nothing. They're waiting for the next junkie to spike himself or herself to death. I'm sick of this country. I'm sick of the upside-down country I live in because of Obama. He turned the country upside down. He's burning the world down. Everything this man touches goes to pieces. And you're supposed to sit here and say it's not his fault. When does it become his fault? When does anything become his fault? Tell me when. When? Nothing's his fault. This was an inside job. The Taliban are even boasting that they penetrated the Afghan military, which means they've now backed into the Defense Department. So if it's not an overt double agent inside our Defense Department, how many Muslims from Afghanistan are in the Defense Department as observers? Mr. Panetta, in order to show a new booklet out there, print a new a booklet like a college catalog. The Army reflects America's diversity. Well, you know, I got a sad story to tell my listeners, and I was looking for how to donate money to the SEALs, and I found a site. that showed all the SEALs who died since the year 2000. And I posted it on michaelsavage.com, and I'm sick to tell you my headline, because my sarcasm sometimes gets the best of me. You know what it says? No women and no minorities amongst the dead SEALs. How racist and how sexist the SEALs are. Even I can't take my own satire or sarcasm. But it's interesting to me that the list of dead SEALs, their pictures, doesn't seem to reflect America. Isn't that interesting? It doesn't reflect America. Shall I keep repeating it? Go to my website and take a look till your heart starts to scream about the gang that took over this country. They're burning the world to the ground. What's next to go? Someone made $1 billion? Someone made $10 billion, rather, on the trade? $10 billion they made? Who is that? Why the government hunt down the man who traded against the rating system and made $10 billion and tried them for treason? Put a stop to the speculators, wouldn't it? Instead of taxing the people who make a living? So hunt them down. You can find them who made $10 billion. You can shake someone down that keeps a library book too long. The government, they know who made the $10 billion. How much of that slush is coming back into the Obama campaign? You ever ask yourself that question? And what's going to happen to the dollar? Is it going to be, God forbid, like Weimar Germany, where you need a wheelbarrow full of cash to buy some groceries? There was a term, going back to the Revolutionary War, where the term not worth the continental dollar originated. When the U.S. Continental, a fiat currency, fell in value, and by 1780 was worth 1/40th of face value. And by May of 1781, right here in America, it was so worthless it ceased to circulate as money. Why did this happen? You ready for this? It was blamed on too many bills being printed and counterfeits circulated by the British who were waging economic warfare against the colonies. Maybe the Chinese are printing money. Is that possible? Oh, no. Ask Madeleine Albright. They're our best friend. Why don't you ask Bob Dole? They're our best friend. Ask Sandy Berger. They're our best friend. Who's printing the money? Why is the dollar losing value? Why is this government devaluing the dollar along with our enemies? So what happened was, the founding fathers were aware of the problems with the fiat currency, and to prevent runaway inflation from occurring again, they included Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, a statement which said that they could not emit bills of credit and make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. That was in the U.S. Constitution. Did you hear that? And at the beginning, there was language that allowed the federal government to print money. But do you know that this was later stricken from the final version, Mr. Geithner? That's right. You don't even have the right to print money. Yes, the founding fathers did not give the federal government of the U.S. the explicit constitutional right to print money, Mr. Geithner. Now let's come up to the modern era. What happened? Deficits during the Johnson and Nixon administrations as a result of the communist, socialist, liberal, great society of Lyndon Baines, Mao Tse-tung, Johnson, the great society with welfare for all, the deficits of the communist Johnson and his printing of money led to a run on the dollar in the late 60s when foreign holders of the dollar sought to convert their paper dollars to gold before the U.S. vaults were stripped of gold. What happened? Facing a complete loss of the nation's gold supply, Nixon removed the U.S. dollar from the gold standard in 1971, thus defaulting on the U.S. promise that any nation could redeem their dollars for gold. At that moment, the U.S. dollar became a fiat currency. And what's happened since is even more alarming. By 2005, the U.S. money supply had expanded 13-fold. Before that, for the 34 years before that, from 1937 to 1971, the money supply only doubled. But by 2005, it had expanded 13-fold. Now, this could normally lead to hyperinflation. But we haven't seen hyperinflation. Why? Because the dollar is the world's reserve currency. What this means is the other nations have to buy and hold on to dollars. However, my friends, the reserve status is a privilege. It is not a right. And China is now calling for a substitution of the dollar as a reserve currency. You know what will happen? Do you know what will happen if the U.S. dollar is taken out as the global reserve currency, which China wants, it would be a catastrophe for the value of the dollar. Everyone holding dollars would rush to get out of them, either by outright currency conversion or by bidding up the value of U.S. goods as they rush to unload their dollar holdings. And what would the impact be on you if you have money in a bank? Are you ready for this? Peter Schiff of Euro-Pacific Capital says the dollar could devalue by more than 70%. I'm going to stop right here. If you want to read more about it, there's a fabulous article by Jonathan Sherman, U.S. Dollar is the Next Financial Shoe to Drop. I took it from Forbes and linked it to michaelsavage.com. I'll go to the callers now on the debacle that should have made Obama hang his head in shame, if not resign. But obviously the man has no shame, no shame whatsoever. Pittsburgh, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, good afternoon.
Go ahead, please.
I'm a former Army helicopter pilot, and I'm definitely not an Obama fan by any means, but I think we need to get some facts straight. Under Special Ops Command, pretty much all the Army, all the insertions and 99% of the flying is done by Army helicopters under a Special Ops group that's based in two different bases in the States. If you ever seen Black Hawk Down, I'd give you a good example. Those helicopters that were used in that movie were the actual Special Ops helicopters.
All right, so you answered question number one, which was why was an Army pilot flying it? It's because it's always an Army pilot. Is that true?
Yes, and they go through the
No, I want to clear the air. I'm an amateur in this area, or not an expert. So number one question, there are no SEAL pilots?
There may be a pilot that used to be a SEAL, but SEALs are ground troops. I don't know if any of them have been trained in
flying. Right, fair enough. What about putting all of them in one Chinook, slow-flying Chinook? Did that make sense? Is that standard?
Not necessarily. I do know from some of the debriefs that have been putting out that they were shot down leaving the site. They had been taken in to deal with some Rangers that were caught in a firefight, and the helicopter was actually shot down departing. There could be numerous reasons why. I know that, during the Bin Laden mission, that one of the helicopters got, it wrecked, and so there were a fair amount of troops that were on one helicopter departing. So, situationally, there's many reasons why. Yes, the ideal situation is you don't want that many of one unit on an aircraft, especially somebody is.
Let's start with the ugly fact that more SEALs died in this one incident than in the history of the whole SEAL, the history of the SEALs. So therefore, somebody made a huge error in calculation, I would think. And let's put aside the pilot issue. I would think it would have made more sense to not put all the troops in one helicopter. And number two, again, as a layman looking in, why a slow-flying Chinook as opposed to three fast attack helicopters?
Well, I agree with you on having – who knows how many aircraft were in the area. But once again, getting back to the Army Special Ops, they go through – and this is going to tie into your use of aircraft. They are all trained and are just basically SEALs in the air, so to speak. These guys are – professional aviators that are in the unit for life. It's a very, very close knit.
All right, I accept that. I accept that the first question of mine has been answered. Why not a SEAL pilot? The answer is because basically it's always a Ranger or an Army pilot. The next question is who decided to put all the eggs in one basket? We still don't have an answer to that question. And number three, why a Chinook as opposed to a fast flying attack helicopter?
For Army aircraft, believe it or not, Chinook is actually the fastest helicopter. The Apache, the Blackhawk, and the Chinook are all the primary means of transportation. An Apache is a gun platform, and it can only handle two pilots. There's nowhere to carry any people.
So it couldn't be an Apache. It couldn't have been any other helicopter but a Chinook?
The Chinook's the fastest helicopter. It's just a large troop carrier, but it has the max power. It's just a large helicopter. That's what people.
Yeah, but the bottom line is it was shot down, so the thinking was faulty at some point. So given that it's the only one for the job, why didn't they use three of them?
I can't answer that question, but I will say that anything is can get shot down. I mean,
does it strike you as odd that they were all members of SEAL Team 6, the very unit that killed Osama bin Laden?
Well, I what cracks me up is that the media, every time you see anything on any news station, the first thing out of the mouth after they say that, unfortunately, 22 SEALs got killed is that this was the same unit that killed Osama bin Laden. And you know, it these guys are professionals, and I guarantee you that they, having worked with them and knowing a few of them, that they are very, very close-knit and that they take their reputation seriously. And they
Wait, again, I'm a layman, so correct me if I'm mistaken, but it was the same SEAL team unit, not the same men.
It's irrelevant.
You're saying it's irrelevant. Why is it irrelevant?
Because they're going to go do their job no matter where it is, and that's it's.
Well, of course they're going to do their job, but wouldn't you think that there'd be a juicier target for the Taliban who wanted vengeance or revenge, rather?
No, because they don't know that. There's no way that they knew that that.
Well, now you're dead wrong. Even though you're a former pilot, it doesn't mean you know everything. The fact of the matter is, the Taliban is boasting that they penetrated the Afghan military and they had inside information. So, I mean, just because you say it doesn't mean it's not so. And also, I'm quite concerned, by the way, at the cavalier attitude you're taking as a former pilot, that this is sort of business as usual.
I got to tell you, man, you've never, obviously, you're a layman, never been in anybody can get shot down at any given time.
I understand that, but when have you seen this many SEALs die in one incident? Ever?
Probably World War II.
Okay, but we're not in World War II. The issue is today. The issue is an incompetent command structure. The issue is an incompetent commander-in-chief. The issue is a Defense Department chairman who hasn't even said one word about the death of so many members of a SEAL unit. And the American people are asking the question, not so much because it's a media question, but because common sense dictates asking why were they all in one helicopter, and two, is it simply coincidental that they were members of the same unit that took down Osama bin Laden? Even the Taliban are saying it isn't coincidental, that they penetrated the Afghan military. They knew they were there. So, therefore, there may be more to this than meets the eye. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, you understand why the government is uncomfortable with independent analysts like myself. I didn't say that I have inside information, but I have a fundamental ability to think. So I'm asking questions that an informed citizen not only should ask, but is asking. And I'm asking who was in charge of making that decision to put all of those SEALs in one helicopter, number one. Number two, why has no one been fired? That's the start with. Then we have the financial meltdown. Again, nobody's taking responsibility. We got Obama saying it's not my fault, tax the rich, even though he's every other day he's with the rich. Then you got the idiot of idiots, the biggest. There's no words for Geithner. Everyone knows he's an office boy. Everybody knows that Geithner is an office boy for people who are making billions of dollars on Wall Street. Everyone knows that. The guy looks it, he sounds it, and he is it. Now this just comes out a minute ago. You ready for this? Remember the fairness doctrine that we thought was put to rest? A new FCC commissioner, one of them, warns of a backdoor way into the fairness doctrine. There could still be an effort to finding a backdoor to eliminate Michael Savage and others in talk radio. A proposal that would give the federal government the ability to make sure broadcasters serve their communities could also be used to wedge in principles of the fairness doctrine. The government could be compiling data as to what kind of content you were airing and whether the government thought that was appropriate content. You hear this? The government has to decide whether it's appropriate content? You mean I'm criticizing Geithner, so he says that's inappropriate content? Or I'm criticizing some doofus in the military for this decision, so he says, oh, hey, get him off the air, that's inappropriate content? That's communism, Johnson. That's totalitarian. Pass the fairness doctrine. I'm coming out of retirement, and I'll have 10 million people marching around America. How's that? You try to pull this one, I'll organize 10 million people with everybody else in radio. It could be political speech, they say. It could be shows on baking or gardening. But we don't know where the government is headed. This is your government at work. This is your government at work. But the worst of your foes is the sun over Ed. You must wear your helmet for all that is said. If he finds you uncovered, he'll knock you down dead, and you'll die like a fool of a soldier, fool, fool, fool of a soldier. When first under fire and you're wishful to duck, don't look nor take eat at the man that is struck. Be thankful you're living and trust to your luck, and march to your front like a soldier, front, front, front like a soldier. And when you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains, and the women come out to cut up what remains, just roll on and go to your God like a soldier. Go, go, go like a soldier. Go, go, go like a soldier. Go, go, go like a soldier. Soldier of the Queen. Those are a few little pieces from Rudyard Kipling as the young British soldier. Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires. Pennsylvania Tech, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I would like to kind of clear up some muddy water on this Navy SEAL atrocity. It really breaks my heart because I knew some of those boys that were on that chopper. And one thing, the Navy SEALs hardly ever use a Chinook to go into a combat situation. One, even though that pilot that was just on there a little while ago said that they are fast, they are sluggishly slow on a turn. Their missile engagement is horrifyingly bad compared to the Black Hawk or the Hilo helicopter, which is a preferred helicopter they use. Its capability is not adequate. It's a humongous target. And now,
well, so you're taking a different side. You're taking a little bit more towards my cynical viewpoint about.
I came back home. I spent 12 months over in Iraq just recently. I'm with a Ranger Battalion. I won't say the name or nomenclature.
But Tex, is it in your mind unusual to put all these troops in one helicopter to begin with?
It's beyond unusual. My last operation that I did, because I'm a sniper with the Rangers, and I have, you know, not just from shooting, I do a lot of surveillance, and we do a lot of information gathering. And you never see them in that bulk. They're always either, if they're going into a hot zone and a rapid intervention, they're going to ride on Kiowa strike helicopters with benches on the side. And they do what
they call it. So somebody is confirming Michael Savage's suspicion that there was a command decision that cost the lives of these SEALs. I also allege that there may be a double agent inside the Defense Department. And I am saying that the American people should be...
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is a legitimate source of concern. But here's the good news. Our problems are eminently solvable, and we know what we have to do to solve them. With respect to debt, our problems is not confidence in our credit. The markets continue to reaffirm our credit as among the world's safest.
As he spoke, they flushed.
Our challenge is the need to tackle our deficits over the long term.
I guess they didn't teach you that at the Ruckus camp.
Got to work, like a slave all day. He'll come to
down 634 points. So how many SEALs died? 21? We don't know. It's like nothing happened, but a dirty, filthy Hollywood slut dies of an overdose. Amy Winehouse. They went on for 3 weeks about a slut with a needle in her arm. They went on with flowers and crying and teddy bears. For weeks. Oh, 27 years old, only 27. But here's the best of the best dead, and like nothing happened. And I'm asking questions. I'm not a military man, but I have a reasonable mind, and I have a logical mind, and I'm asking questions that any reasonable man or woman would ask. One, why a slow flying, slow turning Chinook helicopter? Two, why put all of them in one helicopter? Three, if the Taliban themselves are boasting that they've infiltrated the Afghan military, why should I not ask Have they not infiltrated our military right here in Washington, D.C., especially with the insanity of this government obsessed with diversity and making everyone think that it's a college campus where the brochure looks like America and the world? We are one. Let's all sing together. Let's bring in some Afghani soldiers into the Defense Department to show them how unracist we are. You get the picture? And by the way, there's another story that I just published, that talked about, that came out minutes ago. Did Soros make $1 billion betting on the downgrade? Why, it couldn't be Soros. After all, he's a good man. He likes the poor. Couldn't be Soros. After all, he hated Bush to the extent that he said anybody but Bush, remember? And, of course, he put Obama in office. Many of us believe there's evidence that he was behind the debacle to begin with and trickle-up poverty. My entire chapter on the banking scandal, the Wall Street nightmare, was very well researched. I believe there's evidence that this was a self-induced meltdown, and it was specifically created to make sure there'd be a panic, and people would say, anybody but the old boys, let's vote in this new young fellow who's such a nice young man. No one knew who Obama was, but he swore it would be honest, and it would be this, and it would be that. The next thing that we knew, we woke up, and there was Nancy Pelosi with a big hammer boasting how she just took $1 billion out of the economy. $1 billion. For what? Where did it go? To the banks. To the banks. So now we're asking, did Soros make $1 billion? Somebody made $1 billion betting that there'd be a downgrade. And what happened 2 weeks ago, remember Soros was no longer going to be investing other people's money, because once you don't invest other people's money and only your family money, you're not subject to the same SEC requirements and rules of disclosure. And then all of a sudden this happens? We don't know. But if we had a sovereign government that was not beholden to this man, there'd be a congressional hearing. They could tell you who made that $1 billion. They could tell you with the push of a key. After all, they know if you don't pay your taxes. They know if you don't return a library book. They know if you sneeze, the black helicopters come to get you. They don't know who made the $1 billion? You must be joking. How much of that $1 billion is going to wind up in Barack Obama's reelection campaign? Ever think about that? Well, here we are. Who made the $1 billion? We don't know. We don't know. Why is Geithner still Treasury Secretary when the man apparently can't even hold on to his own house? Helicopter crashed in Taliban trap. That's the one that's really bothering me, because you see, an economy that's melting down is very, very significant, obviously, for all of us. But the death of men like this is even more significant, especially when the vermin in the media who shed crocodile tears over the death of a degenerate junkie like Amy Winehouse have said almost nothing about the death of the SEALs. It's the largest single loss of SEALs in any one action in the history of the SEALs unit. And let me tell you something else, because I'm the only one in the country willing to say it. The king has no clothes. I went up to the SEALs donation page, and I looked at all the men who died since the SEALs were formed. Rather, since the year 2000. And it was strange. They were all white males. It just struck me as odd, because I thought that, after all, don't they believe in diversity in the military? Didn't they have Major Nidal Hassan screaming Allah Akbar and writing Allah be praised on medical reports, and they didn't fire him? After all, didn't the military believe in diversity to that extent? It seems to me it's odd that all of these men were white males. So I posted that picture, in case you want to make a donation to the SEALs, it goes directly to them, on michaelsavage.com, and I put up a sarcastic headline because it struck me as odd, you see, and my headline is really odd. It says, "No women, no minorities among dead SEALs. How sexist and racist of them." Is that too much for you? Next to it, Barney Frank says, "Gut military spending to save Fanny." Does he mean his Fanny, or does he mean Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac? Ron Paul warns Savage of next bubble burst. He was on the show last week. If you missed it, you can still hear it on the michaelsavage.com website. It's still up there. It's beyond belief to see what's going on. The world is literally on fire. It's like Nero fiddles, Nero barbecues while Rome burns. The guy's like a modern Nero. He wrecks the country last week by forcing through grotesque pornographic spending increases, okay? No cuts. And the next day, he high-fives his cronies and they have a barbecue. Nero barbecues while Rome burns. The Arab Crescent, it's on fire. The picture of Mubarak, our best friend in the Middle East, the most populous Muslim country on earth, Egypt. The man wheeled into a trial amongst the jackals that are now running Egypt in a gurney, in a cage. It says it all. This was orchestrated by Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, Hillary Clinton, and Susan Rice and Obama. They did this to the Arab Crescent. And again, they're getting away with it. No one seems to put two and two together. The world is on fire. The world is melting down. Our currency is melting down. And so, therefore, here I am on the Michael Savage show, coming in again after dental surgery on the weekend. Again, I had to go in. I had a problem. I'm telling you point blank, I wasn't going to be in today. I'm a very healthy guy, but things happen. I had dental work last week. I joked about it Friday. I had a disaster over the weekend. I had to have it done yesterday, medication, this and that, didn't sleep. I wanted a day or two off. I can't take time off. I cannot take off like Congress can. They're on vacation. I'm not. I also would like to go to a lake for a month. I'd also like to dip my toes in a hot ocean for a month. I can't do it. I can't do it. The country is burning under Obama. You got race riots breaking out around the country that you're not supposed to notice either. You're not supposed to notice it's a certain thing. Wisconsin, oh, we didn't see that either. Oh, the SEALs, all white men, we didn't see that either. Who made $1 billion on the credit downgrade? We didn't see that either. I see no evil, they hear no evil, they speak no evil, except against white Christian heterosexual conservatives. That's the only evils that the vermin in the media attack. The white Christian heterosexual. You know, I read not an obituary of one of the SEALs, but it was his mother and father. I read something that broke my heart. You know what she said? I don't even remember the guy's name. Guy's 30. He has 2-3 kids. Gave his life for the country. You know what she said, the mother? She said, now I can talk about what my son did for this country. I couldn't talk about it before. What a beautiful mother she was. She didn't blame anybody. She was so proud of her son in life and in death. She talked about him as a little boy. She talked about what a great kid he was. She talked about a man who believed in God and country and family. God and country and family. And as I speak, vermin are saying you can't pray in the military. You can't have a cross in the military. But the crescent is allowed. The Wicca religion, so-called, is allowed in the military. But God forbid you should pray to Jesus. When are the people going to stand up to these people? When are you going to stand up to these vermin? When? I keep asking myself. Now, you could say this is all by accident because they're inexperienced community organizers or college schmucks. This is the kind of stuff that these idiots in college talk about. Oh, when we get power, we'll do this. We get power, we'll do that. Oh, we'll have an Arab Spring. Look how nice the young men look in the tight dungarees. They all have Blackberries. This is something you'd expect from naive fools who don't have any, let us say, street experience, okay? But I think it's more than that. I actually think it's more than that. I don't think it's all by happenstance, do you? So I can ask you questions, you can give me answers, and we're never going to get the answers. Because you see, although I'm at work, and although you're at work by listening to this show, because you could be listening to some drivel, you could be listening to some schmuck talking about a baseball, or some putz talking about some entertainment, but you're at work right now. It requires work for you to listen to me. I know that. I know this isn't easy. I know it's not easy. It's not easy to listen to me. I admit it. It makes you sweat. It makes your heart pound. But that means I'm doing my job. And I'm at work because I have to be at work. Sometimes I think I feel like Atlas. Did someone in the Defense Department tip the Taliban? Who made $10 billion on credit downgrade? Is the U.S. dollar the next financial shoe to drop? The Taliban boast they've infiltrated the Afghan military. Nightmare on Wall Street. Barney Frank says gut the military spending to save Fannie. Obama nicks a school standard so dummies can pass. And then finally on MichaelSavage.com on the right side, it is 1-2. How sexist and racist. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Plenty of good ideas about how to achieve long-term deficit reduction that doesn't hamper economic growth right now. Republicans and Democrats on the bipartisan fiscal commission that I set up, put forth good proposals. Republicans and Democrats in the Senate's Gang of Six came up with some good proposals. John Boehner and I came up with some good proposals when we came close to agreeing on a grand bargain.
As he spoke, the market tanked. That's how much confidence they have in the president. He's lost the confidence not only of the American people, but of the world. They're all on to him. They all see through him. The only people who still believe in him are MSNBC, NBC, CNBC, ABC, and CBS, and CNN, of course, and half of Fox News. She changed her hairdo. She's finished, whatever her name is. One of them, they gave her a hairdo. That's over. Once they take a beautiful girl and they do a hairdo on her, it happened to someone on CNN 15 years ago. I never saw her again. Finished. But I don't want to talk about her. You know, the blonde, the pretty blonde. Finished on Fox News. They're moving her out. They gave her a hairdo. She looks like a 1940s singer. Like a Betty Grable job. There's so much news. It's frightening. I got to give you a leavening agent. I got to give you a little bit of leavening here, or the bread's going to be too hard. I got to pump a little air into the show right now because you're frightened. And you should be. You've got a complete charlatan in the White House put in by nefarious elements in the country. He's commander-in-chief. He doesn't say really very much about the death of the SEALs, when in fact, any other president who was in charge of the military when that many SEALs died would call for flags at half staff. Something. Nothing. Nothing. But if a rap star fell down and broke his neck on a guitar, I guarantee he'd call for flags lowered in the country. Right from the barbecue. Right from the barbecue, that's all. I'm telling you that SEAL accident, or excuse me, the shoot down of that helicopter doesn't make sense to me. Somebody put them all in one barrel, and they shot them down like fish in a barrel. Somebody did this, and nobody has yet been called on the carpet for it. And I'm not on vacation. But it seems to me that the military should call out whoever called for them to all fly in one slow-turning helicopter and have him fired, if not put in jail for 30 years. David in Las Vegas, you're on the Savage Nation.
All right, Mike. I was just calling because I've worked several times with several operations. I'm retired from Force Recon, Marine Corps. I have worked several operations with SEALs, and they always have multiple excursion vehicles to get out. They have multiple rendezvous points and multiple helicopters. They never fly more than four man to a chopper.
All right, so here I am. Here I am, an amateur looking in. No experience in the military, but I have common sense. Wouldn't common sense dictate that you don't put all of these men in one helicopter?
Absolutely. They never do that. Only time that it usually ever happens, unfortunately, say, is when Marines and Rangers get put together. But the SEALs are always treated higher level, not getting any disrespect to them. But they always have the Cadillac version of anything that's going on.
All right, so something doesn't make sense to you as well, right?
Absolutely. They never do that. And then a Chinook, usually half the time, those are used to haul in heavy machinery or supply line. If they're going into a red zone that's hot line, they're in a firefight, they're not going to bring one of those in because most of the Afghans are going to know that, or any of the Al-Qaeda fighters are going to know that they're bringing something. They're going to shoot at it, but they're not going to focus that as their main target. So that right there.
In other words, it's such a big target that they're going to say there must be a lot of troops on it, in other words.
Be that, or it's going to be a supply or ammo dump in case if they're taken trying to hold a front. They're not going to.
All right, so everything was wrong about this from top to bottom. This is the equivalent of Jimmy Carter's helicopters crashing in the desert. Am I right about that? Only it's worse.
Yes.
Remember when Carter's presidency went up in smoke when he sent the rescue mission in to get the hostages in Iran and the helicopters crashed into each other? And the outcry in the media, why is there no outcry? Because the saint is in the White House?
There's somebody behind with it. Who knows? It might have been Obama's cousin. Who knows? But somebody
who in the army called for this mission to be all these men in one helicopter? We have a right to know, don't we? Do we have a right as American citizens to demand an inquiry into this?
Well, yes, we should, because if we all have support, I still support my fellow brethren. They're still, you know, having to be out in that sandbox. Absolutely. There should be some kind of resolution. But like you said, nobody's doing anything about it.
The graveyard of empires, Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires, and the death of these SEALs, to me, was the final nail in the coffin. The final nail in the coffin. The final nail in the coffin. But I have to ask the question, who in the Pentagon tipped off the Taliban?
Savage.
There is no one who embodies the qualities that I mentioned more than the men and women of the United States Armed Forces. And this weekend, we lost 30 of them when their helicopter crashed during a mission in Afghanistan.
Let's stop right there. We lost 30 of them, men and women? Are there women in the SEALs that I don't know about? Again, more of this double talk and propaganda? 30 of them? What are they, chickens? What do you mean 30 of them? He's the commander-in-chief. He should have said, I'm asking that the flags in this country be flown at half-staff in honor of the men of the SEAL Team 6 who died when their helicopter was shot down this weekend. But he didn't say that. When we lost 30 of the men and women again? More of the same propagandist rubbish that this man has become famous for? He's commander-in-chief. The man is wrecking everything, whether it be the Arab Crescent on fire or the economy in turmoil, the S&P falling 6.6% as he gave his sophistic speech. And I say that in a strange way. I don't mean sophisticated at all. I meant sophistry. Again, look it up. Sophistry, an art practiced by the ancient Greeks that they taught their aristocratic sons how to say a lot and mean nothing. Sophistry. Bill Clinton was one of the experts in sophistry. An expert. Speak eloquently and say nothing. See, I don't speak eloquently, so I have to compensate for it by trying to make sense. That's the difference. I'm not a sophist. Many people say, oh, his voice is too gruff. He sounds like a longshoreman of the 50s. Sounds like a truck driver. I'm proud of that because it was the longshoremen and the truck drivers who actually knew what was going on in this country. It wasn't the microcephalics from Harvard. So let's get back to this. Who's responsible for the death of the SEALs? Don't you find it odd that all of them were in one helicopter, in a slow-flying, slow-turning helicopter at that? And I have to go back now. We've had two or three different people have called. One said that it's typical for them to fly in Chinooks. I'm starting to think he was a government agent, by the way, paid to call the show, because the last caller from Las Vegas said that's not true. They never use Chinooks to transport men into a hot LZ. Never. Something is wrong here. I'm telling you, something is wrong. And I'm not on vacation. Congress is on vacation. And who made the $1 billion on betting against the bond rating on the American debt being a debt going from AAA to a AA+? Who made the $1 billion? Oh, the government doesn't know? They know if you miss $10 on your taxes. They know if you buy a bullet, they know who sold you the bullet. But they don't know who made the $1 billion? Okay, let's take the callers. Ken in Tennessee, you're up on the Savage Nation.
I'd like to add one question and then provide an answer to possibly all of them.
Thank you.
Why were so many SEALs on one mission and this particular type of mission? And the answer, possibly the same dismisses inexperienced people who are squandering this country's economy are also squandering the cream of its military.
Oh, God.
Misuse and overuse.
Oh, God, I just can't even think that they would do this on purpose. I don't want to go there. I really don't want to go there. I can't imagine that that would be so. I think it's purely incompetence and bad planning, incompetence, college girls at the top of the command in the military now. God only knows who made this decision. Who made this decision? Was it an Army decision? Was it a Navy decision? Was it an executive decision? Was it a CIA decision? Was it a Panetta decision? Who would have made such a decision? You know, I have a man, Lieutenant Behenna. I have to mention him again. Many of you have given a lot of money to his defense. The man is rotting in Leavenworth Prison. He was an Army Ranger. He's rotting. His mother wrote me a letter, a tear-filled letter last week. I put it on my website. The Army turned down her appeal again. They've given Nidal Hassan, who killed all those people, one chance after another to stay out of jail, while her son, an Army Ranger, is in prison for doing his job in Iraq. It's sickening and started under Bush. I just can't begin to tell you what I would do if I were in charge. Behenna would be out, and whoever put him in prison would be in prison. But I'm not in charge. Something's wrong with the SEALs here, all dying in one. Helicopter number one and type helicopter number two. Something is wrong with this picture. Chicago. Frank, go ahead. You're up in the air.
Michael Savage, Frank from Chicago. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I was scratching my head as well because I am not a military analyst. I'm the father of a CH-53 pilot in the United States Marine Corps. He's a Naval Academy graduate, and he flies a CH-53, which is typically used for infiltration and exfiltration of troops in those highly volatile situations. You may recall a successful mission of a CH-53 when Scott O'Grady was rescued in Kosovo. The CH-53s, plural, flew in. They are always, in every case, whenever they fly, escorted by Cobra gunships. So they're always protected. Yes, they fly, they say, low and slow, but they have three jet engines, and they can outmaneuver a Cobra. So I'm wondering...
Well, I would disagree with your analysis, because this came out 2 minutes ago from the McClatchy News Service. Pentagon to reconsider landing Chinooks in battle zones. Kabul, Afghanistan. The story just came out 2 minutes ago. It's breaking. Two Pentagon officials told McClatchy on Monday that an investigation into the helicopter crash that killed 30 American troops would probe whether it's a mistake to send the large lumbering Chinook helicopter into a Taliban firefight where it's a target for insurgents. As the remains of the 30 troops killed in the military's deadliest incident of the Afghan war are being flown back to the U.S., U.S. commanders confirmed that the servicemen were flying to the aid of American troops embroiled, blah, 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 and was shot down by an RPG. And now we have a few more details. The helicopter was reportedly fired on by an insurgent rocket-propelled grenade while transporting, blah, blah, blah. The Pentagon announced that the return of the servicemen's remains, blah, blah, blah. Here it comes. Separately, two defense officials told McClatchy that a military investigation into the crash would ask whether dropping a Chinook into the middle of a battle is too dangerous now. Before the incident, the Taliban rarely had shot down a Chinook, bolstering commanders' confidence that the military could use the aircraft, which can carry more people than the Black Hawk, under such circumstances. But just 2 weeks earlier, on July 25, the Taliban used an RPG to shoot down a Chinook in eastern Afghanistan's Kunar province, injuring two U.S. service members. That Chinook was struck in the bottom and was forced to make a hard landing, defense official said. On Saturday, officials said the grenade struck the middle of the helicopter, essentially splitting it in midair, killing everyone on board. Area residents told McClatchy by phone that the ground forces and the Taliban were in the midst of a firefight less than a mile from the crash site. Okay, so even the military now is starting to question whether the slow-flying Chinook is the proper vehicle to fly into a hot landing zone. So we're getting callers now that I'm not so sure are really from fathers of helicopter pilots or helicopter pilots. I'm starting to think that the government is so well-oiled right now under Obama that they're calling in the show with false reports and false calls to make it sound like they're on my side when they're not on my side. Okay? That's what I'm seeing. Something's wrong with this picture. Something is wrong. Now, what about the $1 billion somebody made betting on the downgrade of our debt? Who did it? Was it Soros? Why are people saying it was Soros if they don't know? Why would they guess Soros? Israel in New York, WOR, go ahead, please. You're calling on the $1 billion that somebody allegedly made on the downgrading of our debt, right? So, therefore, the S&P downgrade, somebody made $1 billion, and they're trying to guess who it was. Some hedge fund made it. Israel, who do you think did it?
Michael, first of all, there's a lot more than a billion being made. In the past 2 weeks, over $2 trillion is lost in the equity markets in the U.S. Now, the market works on a zero-sum game. So, if $2 trillion was lost, that means $2 trillion was made. And people have to look.
Now, hold on. I've said this in the past, and I was criticized for it. Is that absolutely true?
Yes.
Are you in the financial markets, Israel?
I was a broker, trader. I was in investment banking.
I actually had an argument about this with somebody 10 years ago. She said to me, don't forget that every time someone loses a dollar, someone's making a dollar. That's still true?
All you have to look up is what a zero-sum gain is, and that's exactly how the equity markets work.
Okay, so please go on with your thought.
Now, forget about the equity markets. As far as currency, why Soros isn't currency? Because currency is the only market that has no regulatory body that oversees them, period. The currency markets, Forex, to be more specific, it churns daily $4 trillion, which is more than the Chicago Board of Trade, the Big Board, and the NASDAQ all combined.
Hmm.
in this marketplace, you are able to get tremendous leverage. Now, you said earlier in the show, and that's why I wanted to call, you said, how is it possible that a person could make 1,000 times their money? Well, it's very simple. In the equity markets, I could get 20 times my money leverage, 20 to 1. I have offshore banks that will give me leverage in currency markets, 750 to 1.
Oh, my God.
One ratio.
All right, so wait, let's stop right here. This is very intriguing. I'm going to go back to something simple, Israel. When I was in high school, I studied the Great Depression in high school. My teacher taught it to me. And the teacher explained back when I went to high school that one of the causes of the Great Depression was that people were able to buy on margin with almost no controls, nothing down, in other words. And as a result, there was wide speculation, which caused the crash. And as a result of that, certain controls were put in after the Great Depression to prevent that kind of wild speculation. Is that true so far?
Well, the currency markets are outside, like I said, regulatory bodies. That's why the biggest players in the world are still playing in this casino. Not only are the biggest players, but the biggest people who wash money, this is the biggest laundromat in the world because it churns $4 trillion a day and it's this liquid. Every major player is cleaning their money through the currency markets daily.
Whoa. What do you mean by every major player? You mean the underworld?
Anybody who has substantial money and needs to wash it, you don't go to a bank. You go to a big-time laundromat, and this is the Forex currency market.
All right, but let's say the $1 billion on the downgrade. They say a hedge fund did it. What other hedge funds are there that have this capacity?
Oh, there's lots. Many.
And how long has it been legal to trade currency? Forever?
The currency markets have picked up steam since probably the early 90s, which is also around the same time where Soros started making his first money, which happened to be in the nationalization in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
The company Renaissance Capital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
how could one man have so much power over a world's economy? I mean, even Rothschild didn't have this much power. If you know anything about money, you know Rothschild's famous statement says, he said, don't give me control of a country, give me control of its currency, and I'll control the country. That's what Rothschild said.
Not to scare people, but there's many people like Soros and bigger than Soros who are in these markets who remain nameless.
Mm-hmm. So they have more power than a sovereign government, in other words.
Well, the leverage gives them that ability, because if I put down $1 billion and I could get 750 to 1 on my money,
yep.
Playing with some heavy...
All right, so therefore, if we had a sane government with regulatory controls, we wouldn't permit this kind of leverage, would we?
Of course not, but there's no regulatory body. That's why all
No, there's no regulatory body. We have a stooge named Geithner. We have nobody in the SEC. Just as under Bush, we had nobody. We had a man named Chris Cox, who nobody ever investigated, who let the meltdown occur. He walked away like nothing happened. There were Clinton took out Glass-Steagall. It was Clinton who got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, who got rid of the uptick rule?
The uptick rule was done because typically a market moves down faster than when it moves up. So theoretically it was done to prevent, like they put in circuit breaker rules.
No, I understand, but who eliminated the uptick rule? Which president?
The uptick rule, I believe, happened currently. No, it was with...
It happened under George Bush. I believe it was under George Bush and under the stupendous watch of Chris Cox. So, in other words, this is a bipartisan screwing of the American people. Amen, brother. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There is one area in American policy where we are doing things disproportionate to the rest of the world. I'm sorry. You know, we don't give our older people more medical care. We don't have a better retirement. We don't spend more on the environment. Where America is disproportionate is in our extraordinary willingness to be the military policeman for the whole world.
Oh, shut up, you pinko rat, you. That's pinko rat Frank, who should be in jail for running Bonnie Fay and Bonnie Frank into the ground. Bonnie Fanny Frank, you liar, you. You're blaming the military for the S&P downgrade? It's frauds like you, you. You see, if I were in charge, I'd investigate you and your fingers were into Fannie Mae and I'm getting apoplectic right now. The uptick rule. The uptick rule was eliminated by George Bush. That rule went into effect in 1938 to prevent trading. Let me start from the top. The uptick rule refers to a trading restriction, restricts speculators, and it disallows short selling of securities except on an uptick. In other words, you can't short sell on a downturn. And for the rule to be satisfied, the short must be either at a price above the last traded price of the security or at the last traded price if that price was higher than the price in the previous trade. Why do you think the uptick rule was put in 1938? To prevent the kind of speculation that we're seeing today in the United States of America. But this rule, which was in effect since 1938, was eliminated under George Bush and Chris Cox when Rule 201 Regulation SHO became effective in 07. I have been calling for the reintroduction of the uptick rule. I did so in trickle-up poverty. I called for the reintroduction of the Glass-Steagall Act, eliminated by the stupendous president, Bill Clinton, okay? And as you well know, I have as much power as my dog does. We have no power. The Tea Parties now are being castigated for being too American. Too American! 2007, the uptick rule eliminated. It limits how a trader can sell a stock short. That led to the collapse of our economy. That led to Barack Obama as president. That has led to the downgrade. And of course, my friends, still nothing has been done to reintroduce the uptick rule. I told you, it's not that everything I learned I learned in high school, but I learned an awful lot in high school. I went to Jamaica High School as a kid. The teachers were very good. The kids learned what you get today probably in a PhD from Harvard in, I would say, political science. I knew more. When I got out of high school, in Jamaica High School, I probably knew more than the average political science teacher. Political science professor at Harvard does today. So we studied the Great Depression. They told us the reason it happened, wild speculation, where you could buy on margin. I learned it in high school. What do you mean buy on margin? In other words, you could put nothing down and trade stocks all day long, so eventually it all collapsed. It was a house of cards. So the wise men after the Great Depression put in rules. You had to put down a certain amount. See, remember, when I bought a house, I had to put down 20% on a house. Not 19, not 18, not 15, not 14. If I didn't have a 20% down payment on my first house, which was $45,000, I needed $9,000. I didn't have the $9,000. I had to work for it however long I worked. I took every penny I had and I bought my first house for $45,000 in, I don't remember the year, 74. I don't even remember, in the early 70s. Every penny I had was $9,000. The bank didn't say, oh, you know what? You're a nice kid. You're a graduate student. You know, let's give you the house for nothing down. Buy two houses, buy a vacation house too, and go buy yourself a new Escalade and then get some bling for your teeth to go with it on government money. And here's some money on the other side so you can buy some Beyonce music and then get some whatever. No, the government didn't. They didn't care. You couldn't buy the Mercedes and the house with nothing down. But now, under Clinton, Bush, just give them a house. Don't even buy it. Give one to every illegal alien for nothing down. Give every illegal alien, everyone on welfare deserves a house, a car, and a cell phone. Then you wonder why there was a collapse. Then on the top, you had the criminals. Eliminating Glass-Steagall, eliminating the uptick rule, and bingo. This rule came about after the public uproar over the great bear market of the late 20s. And so they put it in. Where's the public uproar today, you drug addicts, you? Where's the public uproar over the commander-in-chief who said 20 soldiers died? Men and women died? How outrageous can you get? But just remember one thing. They've never let a crisis go to waste. Just remember that.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
People are calling it not Wall Street, but Fall Street, because investors are fleeing stocks after the S&P downgrade of the United States debt. Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 634.76 points, or 5.6%, to 10,809.85, falling beneath the 11,000 mark for the first time, since November, and it adds to last week's already steep losses. Investors are running from risk, and they struck assets far and wide. But gold futures soared to a record settlement of $1,710.20. And U.S. Treasuries were a winner despite the credit downgrade. People are saying everybody's looking for whatever they perceive as a safe haven, even if it's just plain illogical. This is a big deal. The Russell 2000 index of small capitalization stocks was hit hardest. That's small business, small capitalization. It fell 63 points, or almost 9%. Small caps tend to make more exaggerated moves and are generally viewed as riskier than the widely held shares of large companies. Bank of America down 20% in one day to lead blue chip decliners, stung by both a steep sell-off in financial stocks and by word that American International Group, AIG Inc., is suing B of A, along with a host of other prominent financial institutions, as AIG seeks to recover losses on mortgage-backed securities. AIG stock fell 10%. David Cavanaugh, president of the Grant Park Fund in Chicago, said, "Everyone's running to the fiat currency, gold, gold, gold. The market is telling Washington right now that we don't think that you can get your spending under control." And this is after Obama gave one of his illogical, silly speeches blaming everybody. In fact, Obama's speech was so tepid, all he said was that the S&P downgrade should provide a renewed sense of urgency to tackle a deficit, without saying he'd cut one penny. No wonder the markets are tanking. Okay, the buck stops there with the barbecue chef in chief. The barbecue chef in chief owns the bad financial news. First day of trading on Wall Street after S&P's U.S. debt downgrade saw the Dow dive 633 points. Now let's go on to something that's heartbreaking. The death of 22 Navy SEALs. There are a lot of questions that were not answered by the president today. Michael Savage asked them over the weekend on his website, michaelsavage.com. You want to hear some of these questions? Well, I'm going to ask them anyway, and they're not easy for me to ask. But here's my headline. Did someone in the Defense Department tip the Taliban? Now, why do I ask that question? Because the Taliban are boasting that they've infiltrated the Afghan military. So if the Taliban have infiltrated the Afghan military, and the Afghan military was involved in this SEAL mission, that means they've penetrated the U.S. Defense Department. That means that Obama is a totally incompetent commander-in-chief. That means he may as well be responsible for the death of these SEALs. By the way, the largest loss of SEALs in U.S. history, which leads to the next question, Mr. Panetta. You went from college in Monterey to the CIA, and now they rotated you into the Defense Department. Did you authorize the use of a single helicopter for all of these heroes? And if you did, why? Why didn't you put them on three separate helicopters? Why did you put all your ducks in a row to save on gas, to make it a green mission? I'm sorry to be sarcastic, but somebody's head ought to roll for this, and it shouldn't be mine for asking the question. Somebody's head ought to roll for killing these SEALs. The commander-in-chief should resign. The defense secretary should be fired. It won't happen. Why were there all these men on one helicopter? Number two, and here's a big one. I'm the only one asking it, and I'll ask it again. Why is it that the SEALs were being flown by a U.S. Army helicopter pilot instead of a SEAL pilot? Who made that decision? And what was her name? I say that because anyone have an answer for that one out there? Remember this. Afghanistan is known as the graveyard of empires. The graveyard of empires. The British got defeated there three times. The Soviet Union was destroyed in Afghanistan. The Soviet occupation resulted in the deaths of between 600,000 and 2 million Afghan civilians. Right? How many Russians died? And why did Russia collapse as a result of its failed war in Afghanistan? And why did England get busted on Afghanistan? It's an unmanageable land. Unmanageable. How much has it cost us to be there? Well, those are some of the topics on the Savage Nation. Nightmare on Wall Street. Taliban boasts they've infiltrated Afghan military. Top left on MichaelSavage.com. Did someone in the Defense Department tip the Taliban? They may well have. Police arrest 160 in violent weekend London riots. It was people of color rioting, by the way. You won't see that anywhere, and it's very important to see because they're, after all, they have pent-up anger against the city's police. After all, they don't have it good enough over there. They don't yet own the country. Obama nixes school standards so dummies can pass is my headline. Education officials have been taking down any standards in America. Barney Frank says gut the military to save Fanny, to save his Fanny. China chimed in and said U.S. should cut military spending to get its books in order. How do you like that? Can you believe this? What else is on MichaelSavage.com? Police feared Muslim family would honor kill girl in hospital bed. Well, that's because it's a religion of peace and they wanted her to die peacefully in her hospital bed. 98-year-old woman makes 10th degree black belt. It's an amazing story. Japanese lady. She gave her whole life to this sport of judo. And she is the only living student of judo's founder. Take a look at her. 98 years old. They gave her the black belt. TSA has a new acronym. They steal anything. They steal anything. TSA. They fill you up and they rob your bags. They're stealing again, this time from a kid. They stole $100 from him. Muslims strip and beat a Christian convert. Did you read about that one or didn't make it to the news? New Delhi, India. They stripped and beat a convert to Christianity. But then you don't want to know about that. It's very embarrassing. It really is. All of this and more on MichaelSavage.com. Oh, by the way, here's another one. The European Court has ruled that a satellite dish is a human right. And Jackie Onassis believed LBJ killed her husband. The tapes were recorded within months of the assassination. I agree with her. That's why I wrote Abuse of Power, my fiction debut coming out in a few weeks from now. All this and more on the Savage Nation today.
Savage.
If I were a normal man, A, I would have been dead 30 years ago from what I've been through. That's number one. B, I certainly wouldn't have worked today with what I have going on in the back of my head. It's like when you turn, even you could feel the blood throbbing in the back of your neck. And if I talk too loud, I feel like the pain. I know, I'm not calling anyone. I'll work through it. If it gets worse, what'll happen? I'll work my way through it. It's because I was raised like to be stung by the ants, like the South American hunters. Why do you think I was telling you? Do you understand a point I'm trying to make? The reason the nation is dying is because the people are weaklings, in plain English. The American people are weaklings. Yes, there's been a profusion of phenomenal athletes. And I mean in the average classes of people. I don't just mean professionals. Rock climbers and bicyclers and martial artists. Tremendous profusion. But by and large, we're a nation of weaklings. Raised to be comfortable. And consequently, when you feel a slight quirk or pain, oh, I need a medication. I need to go to Medicare, Medicaid, the doctor. Why isn't the government paying? I want more prescriptions. That's why we're broke. You got to be toughened up, and you don't want to be toughened up. No one does. You want everything for free, and you don't want to hear that you got to be responsible for your own fatness or your own sickness, and you are, and to some extent, of course, there's mysterious elements and accidents. But by and large, you have your health in your own hands. If you were born with reasonably good health, by and large, the health that you are now living with is a result of your lifestyle, in plain English. Plain English. I mean, this is an accepted fact around the world. Since the beginning of time, since Paleolithic times, the mother Paleolith probably said to the child Paleolith, don't eat that garbage, it'll make you sick. Or don't hang around with those kids in the other cave, they're going to have you inhale that junk from that tree over there which killed your Uncle Manny. You know what I'm saying? So there's common sense. So when I say to you, I was raised by a father who said to me, you got to go to work when you're young. You got to sell, you know, learn how to sell, learn how to bear boredom. The most important thing, by the way, is learning. You want to know the toughest thing is bearing boredom in our society. That is probably the toughest job of all. There was the case of the astronaut. He could fly to the moon, came back, right, and had a nervous breakdown when he had to go out with his wife to the supermarket on Saturday. I mean, yeah, that can kill anybody, but that's what did him in. He could handle the rigors of being an astronaut, flying to the moon. Came back about 2 months later, he had a breakdown and went into a nut house. Why? Because he couldn't take the normal life. I mean, his big venture was backing the Buick up in a Safeway parking lot without running anyone over. And he had to like make sure he didn't hit the wrong pedal. I mean, could put anyone into a bug house. The point I'm making is you got to make yourself tough and your kids have to be raised tough. It doesn't mean you have to be mean or cruel or vicious to them, but you have to raise them in a tough way. So you say, well, oh, that's old fashioned. That's all gone out with the window. We do it the Spock way, which is positive reinforcement. Oh, Johnny, good job. I go past the Little League field. I get sad for these kids. The kid misses. The bat flies out of his hand. He falls down. Good job, Johnny. At least you didn't break your neck. Good job, they're yelling. And a little two-year-old, they put him in a they got him dressed up like a goon already. The two-year-old goon, they bought him a suit with the hat. And the kid swings and misses and falls down crying. The father says, good job, Johnny, good job. What good job? The kid swung and missed. What good job? I don't mean you run up and say, idiot, you missed. You don't have to do that. You say, here's how you hit a ball. The way you did it was wrong. There's a right. Oh, you can't say wrong. Because then you're interfering with a liberal education. See, to a liberalist, no such thing as a wrong in an education other than loving your country. If you believe in borders, language, and culture, you're wrong. But other than that, there's no such thing as wrong. So now I'm going to again bring up the example, South America, the tribes in Brazil, deep in the jungles of Brazil. They inhale, they snort the hallucinogenic ayahuasca, which I believe has a component in it. The last I checked, which was similar to an LSD high, and they get stoned out of their mind with the shame. I love the shaman. Another guy been get stoned since he's a kid. Shaman, as far as I'm gonna. All right, so the shaman tells him to snort the gun, and then you go into another world and this and that. But when they teach him to hunt. He's got to go out and hunt, right? He's got to hunt in the jungle. There's no supermarket. So what does he got? He's got a loincloth and a bow and arrow and a spear. The guy's got to go out and provide for himself and his family. He can't call up the Department of Health and Human Services and say, deliver me food or I'll sue you. A, there are no lawyers from NYU in the jungle yet. And B, they know how to hunt and they'll raise from childhood to hunt. All right, so you can't walk out naked in the jungles of South America without expecting to be stung by ants, the fire ants, right? So you have to learn how to put up with being stung without even yelling out. You can't whimper. Why? Because let's say you're hunting a jaguar, and I don't mean in a showroom. Let's say you're hunting a jaguar, or you're hunting a monkey, or you're hunting for whatever you're hunting for. It requires the stealth of an animal, therefore no sound. Therefore, the man is trained to take the multiple stings of this fire ant all over his body. And if he whimpers, he's considered a punk, a coward, a loser, a girl, the lowest of the low of the men. He's not considered even a man if he lets out so much as a whimper. Why is that? Because they're mean? No. Because unless the man learns to sustain, to maintain his composure, even under severe pain, he's going to be he's not going to be able to provide for himself and his family. In fact, he'll probably get killed altogether. He'll just be useless to the tribe. So there's a story in that you have to take home to your children and not be so brainwashed into thinking that you're going to hurt their feelings or you're going to ruin them if you say you did it wrong. Stop with this garbage already. You know, I have a little country place somewhere on a hill in Northern California, which I go to from time to time. The house is way up on a hill, and it's up at the treetop level. It's on a very angled hill, so the treetops are below the deck. And they're Monterey pines. And unfortunately, the Monterey pines have been hit with a disease, and they're losing a lot of their foliage. That's a separate story. But I'm watching a battle going on over the last month. There is a I'm not a bird expert. I'm not at all into ornithology. I wish I knew more about it. But I believe she is a peregrine falcon. They're not a particularly large bird. She is protecting her nest from black, what we call turkey vultures here, who are trying to steal her eggs. You should see this little mother bird. You should see her flying around from tree to tree. And this is going on now every day for a month. And, you know, you want to reach out and help the bird. You can't. It's the it's Darwinian. It's survival of the fittest. I just, yesterday, I was up there, and you see this poor bird, this beautiful bird. She sits up there, and she looks down, and then they start to circle her, and she comes down and dive bombs them, and then they try to dive bomb her, and she's smaller than them. Now, what is that story all about? What's that story about? It's about nature. Nature is brutal. Nature is just simply brutal. What does that have to do with politics? Exactly the same thing. Russia, China, Iran, they are our adversaries. We are the peregrine falcon. We are the eagle. They are trying to steal our eggs and... Again, the markets took a bath today, down 600 and some odd points, all on the news of the S&P downgrade and the president's refusal to cut spending. But some are still seeing hope. And one of them is former Colorado State Senate President John Andrews, who currently serves as the director of the Centennial Institute, which is a think tank at Colorado Christian University. He served as a speechwriter for President Nixon and was a Reagan and Bush 43 appointee. Senator Andrews is joining us to discuss his new book, Responsibility Reborn, A Citizen's Guide to the Next American Century. Senator Andrews, a pleasure to have you on the Savage Nation.
Hey, great to be with you today, Michael.
Before we get to your book, give us your thoughts on the S&P downgrade of our nation's credit and what happened today.
Michael, this reminds me of a guy who goes to the doctor for a routine physical, and the doc takes longer than expected, and when he comes in, he's frowning. He's got that serious look. He's got that clipboard in his hand, and he's saying, "My friend, you are a heart attack waiting to happen. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, but it would be worse if I didn't tell you. This is no fun for America to get this news. It's no fun for the financial markets to be shocked as they have been. It's a blow to the self-esteem, to the superficial chanting of fingers in the air. We're number one, we're number one. Hey, well, America is still number one, but the doctor has told us we've got to change our ways." It ties in really to the alarm that I'm trying to sound with this book, Responsibility Reborn, that the price of freedom is responsibility, the price of success is responsibility. These things don't come free. America has been on borrowed time. Great nations tend to commit fiscal suicide somewhere between 200, 250 years. Historians have realized this is a warning that America is out of time.
Well, how much will this downgrade hurt Obama in 2012? Does it finish him off for that year?
The liberals and the Democrats and the mainstream media are desperate to deflect the blame for the downgrade anywhere except to the president, the supposed leader of the free world, the man who was going to make the oceans recede and heal the planet. No, this is an Obama downgrade. This is reflective of the most bumbling leadership of the economy and America's fiscal integrity of any president that we've seen in my lifetime of 67 years. This is all about Obama in 2012. But with that said, Michael, let's face it, there is a sentimental desire of the American people to believe in their president and to give him the benefit of the doubt for a second term, unless the economic news is just so grim that Americans say, no, this guy's had the only chance that we're willing to give him. I've described the 2012 election as an occasion when Americans are going to realize, I'm in a car. If I don't grab the wheel, we're going to crash. The American public took a chance on an unknown romantic hero, a man of mystery, the healer, the first black president. He is all of that, not taking anything away from him for that. But I think Americans are going to conclude, especially on economic and fiscal grounds, this man gets an F on his report card. This man has to be replaced. The only question is, can the Republicans find a way to blow it? You and I have both seen, Michael, lots of times when they've done that.
Okay. If you were in charge, what would you recommend for turning this country around?
Oh, wow. If I ran the zoo, the great Dr. Seuss question, I would challenge Americans to realize that our greatness can be recovered as it was when we were at the brink once before in the 70s. Remember, America was written off. Jimmy Carter told us to prepare for lower expectations. He as much as said our best days were behind us. America needed to go quietly into the sunset. There was stagflation. There was the Soviet Union rampaging with communist imperialism around the world. There was a series of failed presidencies. There were assassinations. There were riots in the campuses and in the inner cities. And what happened? Well, Reagan was elected, but that was not the cause of America turning around. That was a reflection of Americans looking in the mirror and saying, our country's better than this. I'm better than this. We're not losing freedom on my watch. And out of it came a spontaneous uprising across the country. The political manifestation of it was called the conservative movement, but it was manifested in lots of other ways, in homeschooling, in renewal, in the churches, in a refusal to accept skyrocketing crime rates and drug abuse. Overall, America has been to the brink before. A renewal of responsibility has brought us back before. To the extent that I can, not holding public office anymore, but having the benefit of a terrific platform like yours and a message that I've published in this book, my message is, as we renew responsibility, we will once again be worthy of freedom, and we will be back on the path to success.
Okay, what do you mean by your book title, Responsibility Reborn?
Michael, I'm a grandfather. Young Ian Michael is entering third grade next week. I see the world very much through Ian's eyes and through his mom and dad's eyes, and Daniel and Stephanie and my daughters, Tina and Jennifer. I pretty much had my opportunity, and America has been wonderfully, wonderfully good to me. I've had the opportunity to live through the kind of comeback for America that I described as a young Nixon speechwriter and then young Colorado political activist in the 1970s. I saw us given up as a nation. We were supposedly headed down that path of decline that overtakes nations somewhere after their 200th birthday. I saw it turn around with personal responsibility, and I realized that personal responsibility is the theme of the American miracle from the founding in 1776 to the bicentennial in 1976, and the only thing that will get us to 2076, get us past the graveyard of nations and empires that historians say occurs somewhere around 230, 240, 250 years. We just had our 235th birthday. I'm saying, as Americans said when they brought the country back in the 70s, if we lose freedom, it's not going to be on my watch. That's the message of Responsibility Reborn. When we say A Citizen's Guide to the Next American Century, the subtitle of the book, the American century was the 20th century. Henry Luce of Time magazine christened it that. Are we in for another one? Historians would say no. We've had the only one that we're going to have. I want to argue that the 21st century can again be the American century, not for selfishness or the glorification or chauvinism of our country, but because the whole world needs what America has to give. It's up to us with personal responsibility.
How important is individual responsibility? Is that just a mantra or is it real?
Individual responsibility is the essence of the American success story. Michael, the simplest way I can sum up what the American founding meant in those great years of the Boston Tea Party, 1773, that we relive with the Tea Party of today, 1776, the Declaration of Independence, the 1780s, the forging of a nation with the Constitution, what it all meant is to simply ask a question of history and of mankind. How much success can freedom produce? Well, the answer for the first two centuries was freedom will produce unlimited success. But we began to go soft, as so many nations do. Historians have said, hey, you got about 200, 250 years, you're out of time. Well, there's never been an America before, and we're going to prove that that doesn't have to happen. It'll happen if we do nothing. But it doesn't have to happen if we bestir ourselves. I heard an old black pastor talk about how he made it through when his life was actually on the line in the civil rights struggles in the South in the 1960s. And he said that every day he realized by the 10 most powerful two-letter words in our language what he had to do. What are those words? Wow, that's pretty important to know. If it is to be, if it is, it is up to me. 10 two-letter words. If it is to be, it is up to me. Now, this was a man of faith. He shares my Christian faith. But in this occasion, the pastor didn't appeal to God. He looked in the mirror and he said, wow, I'm going to do what I can do. No doubt he prayed his way through it with God's help as well. America needs to recover that if it is to be, it is up to me, can-do spirit.
Give the Savage Nation the 10-point agenda that you discuss in your book.
Responsibility Reborn is not a political manifesto. It is not a cookbook or a recipe for conservatives and Republicans and the Tea Party to take this country back in 2012 as we began to do in 2010. I hope that that's one of the byproducts of the book. But this is not a Republican cheerleading book. I've mentioned several times my own Christian faith. It is not written in terms of my Christian faith. It's written in terms that I hope all Americans can agree on, whatever their faith, and even those who seek to get by with no faith in God. So the book does not start, or the concluding chapter where I say what must be done, does not start with voting, government, laws, politics, or public policy. It starts at the foundational level where you've got to build infrastructure in order for America to come back. It says let's strengthen families. Let's insist on learning, which is different than improving the schools. This is having kids going into school saying, I'm going to learn. Strengthen families, insist on learning, renew a common culture, get rid of the lie of multiculturalism. All cultures are not equal, and America is not a salad bowl. We have the American culture, the best thing that ever happened to mankind. Number four, expand charity so government doesn't have to do so much. Number five, expect more of churches, once again, so there's not a vacuum into which government and Caesar has to flow. Then, after five agenda items that have nothing to do with politics, then we turn to the political arena. Number six says, assert civic ownership. Michael, now that's a mouthful, but you know just what I mean. We're all in this together. We all own a piece of America. We are stockholders. We are stakeholders. We are not just passengers. We didn't just happen along. God forbid, we are not just spectators. Freedom is not a spectator sport. Assert civic ownership. From there, where do we go in the public policy arena? We've got to rebuild our defenses. We've got to resist over-government. Why do I make that number eight? Because, as I've said, there's an infrastructure of things we do in our communities, our families, our personal lives, before we ever get into the political arena. But in the political arena, we've got to resist over-government. This thing is out of control. The warning signals were there long before the recent debt crisis and the downgrade, but that ought to be all the warning signal we need. Number nine on my 10-point agenda for the next 10 years, we've got to guard America's sovereignty, get rid of the idea that Obama has been peddling, that the United Nations knows better than the U.S. Congress. Number 10, we have to protect freedom of conscience. My fellow Christians, lots of Jewish believers would say protect religious liberty. We have to do that. But even more fundamental than that, we've got to protect the freedom to either worship or not worship. I couldn't live my life without following the living God, but those who choose otherwise, we've got to protect freedom of conscience for everybody. Michael, you know very well, you bring this constantly to the attention of your listeners, there is a threat from radical Islam and from the militant gay lobby that wants to establish thought control in America. So my 10th point in this agenda for 2020 is to protect freedom of conscience. Why does the agenda go out to 2020? Once again, this is a long-term process. Even one decade isn't long enough to get us out of the fix that we're in. Certainly one election cycle or one presidential term is not nearly long enough. And I wanted to frame it as a decade agenda to take my readers' attention purposefully off the notion of partisan victory or just get through the next election cycle or just elect the next savior. Electing saviors of the right or of the left ain't the answer.
You warn us against counterfeit collectivist responsibility. Wow. And mass obligation imposed by government. Could you explain this?
Oh, boy. Obama and the left are masters at focus grouping, poll testing language that they can borrow from us, from Middle America with its common sense, with its heritage of godly values, and turn it against us. Never a better example. I'm working on my book, Responsibility Reborn, and I take a break January 2009 to watch Obama be sworn in as president. An historic day. I said earlier, I take nothing away from this man. It's marvelous that someone of African ancestry, albeit not the descendant of, says near the end of his inaugural address, "I call America to a new era of responsibility." I thought, hey, he's singing my song. Maybe this guy won't be so bad after all. I was skeptical, and my skepticism was fully proven within a week. There's TV footage of Obama shaking his finger at a group of businessmen saying, "It's irresponsible for your companies to make profits." Oh, now we realize his definition of a new era of responsibility is that we are all supposed to sit like children and let government shake its finger at us, scold us, tell us that our common sense and our Judeo-Christian, biblically-based, traditionally-based values are no longer good enough, that they are bigoted, that they are outmoded, and responsibility, according to the definition of big government, Obama, the left, the liberals, the socialists, the progressives, is that we're supposed to do what they tell us to do. That's why I always want that qualifier. When I speak of responsibility, I want to say personal responsibility, individual responsibility, not counterfeit collectivist responsibility that government is going to reprogram us in the course of Obama's agenda to fundamentally transform America. Michael, you do as well as anybody that I know in the public arena of warning your listeners to listen below the surface, soothing, superficial stream of words that we get from the liberals and say, what are they really telling us? And do their actions match their words? We've got to be careful of this Orwellian manipulation of language. Let's be sure that when we say responsibility, we make it personal, not collectivist.
John Andrews, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks. Great talking with you. I've been a listener and a fan for years. The website for the book is exactly the title of the book, responsibilityreborn.com. Responsibilityreborn.com. Really appreciate your help in bringing it to the attention of your listeners. I think it's an important message for America at this testing time.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I have a slight migraine starting on the left side, which is unusual because of the moon. I don't know, something's wrong with me. I feel good. This is frightening. When I feel good, I get very frightened. I'm like used to not feeling good. I committed myself to not feeling good. Many years ago, I learned to not feel good and enjoy it. It's a very interesting thing. Is like years ago, when you're a child, you're told to expect, like, you know, roses. And but then you realize life is terrible. It's hell. You're going to walk on glass. Nothing's going to work out. But you have to keep struggling. You don't give up. Because out of pride, you don't give up. Then if you have children, you don't give up for them. You need to be a role model. So here I am working many years after I should have stopped working. And I normally don't feel good, generally. I'm not a person who feels good. The world's a horrible place. It's worse than ever. We have an imposter Marxist in the White House who wants to raise taxes on men like me and give more to the bums and the leeches. Why shouldn't the age of Social Security be raised to retirement? Why shouldn't they retire 2 years later? You know, you want to ask me, I'll get 2 cents plain, raise the retirement age by 2 years, and then increase co-payments on Medicare to $20 a visit. Hundreds of billions of dollars immediately. Why? If you give a person unlimited health care, any kind of doctor, specialist, double specialist, you can go anytime you want, it's your right, it's your duty, it's your entitlement, of course they're going to go. Why wouldn't you go? Especially if you're retired, let's say you've got nothing to do. You can't stand your husband or your wife, that's if you're still married. So you get to see a nice-looking young doctor pays attention to you and touches you inappropriately, irrespective of if it's an instrument. Still, you're getting touched at something, and they ask you how you are, even if it was 6 minutes. At least you're getting something, and you go to 3-4 of them a week. Some use 2-3 a day, by the way, because it's for free. It's called recreational illness. I wrote about this in 1981 in a book called The Skeptical Nutritionist. I'm always 20, 30 years ahead of my time. So if you got recreationally ill people, they make themselves sick. I got a complaint here in my back. Explain exactly how it feels. I felt a transient ischemia. They read the literature, by the way. They know exactly how to con the doctor. They get the few words they throw in. Oh, you know the word ischemia, really. How'd you learn that, man? Well, I didn't go to medical school exactly, but I would have been a great doctor. You know, it's like people who think they can be a lawyer. You ever meet those people? Oh, my God. The most anything. Let us say some of the stupidest people I ever met are those who said, what a great lawyer I would have been. I can't believe them. You know what it is to really be a lawyer, a top lawyer? It's not them. But it's the same with the doctor. Only a fool would be his own doctor. That's number one. But to get back to the point, you raise the retirement age 2 years, and you make them pay $20 co-payment, hundreds of billions of dollars right there. Why should you not do that? Of course, if you give them unlimited medical care with any specialist they want.